big enough loan from some American banks to keep Astro in my own hands.
When will the space plane be ready to fly again? Jane asked.
Dan almost said it was ready now, but he caught himself in time. As soon as the double-damned FAA winds up its investigation and gives the backup plane a clean bill of health.
Months from now, O'Brien said.
Maybe a year or more.
Maybe,
Dan replied tightly.
Jane said, Denny, could you go to the bar and get a couple more olives for my drink, please?
O'Brien looked back and forth from Jane to Dan and back again, then said,
Sure.
He struggled out of the booth and headed for the bar, which was filled up now with drinkers.
Jane leaned across the table toward Dan. What are you up to? She demanded.
He shook his head. You don't want to know. Her lips tightened.
Do you really need to talk to someone in Venezuela this week?
Yep.
Dan, I don't want you doing anything that will hurt Morgan's chances.
I don't intend to, he answered. Silently, he added, I'm fighting for my life here. Scanwell can take care of himself. O'Brien came back with two green olives on a toothpick, carried daintily in a cocktail napkin. As he grunted back into the booth, Jane said,
Very well, Dan. I'll get one of my people to contact State first thing tomorrow.
Thanks, said Dan. Suddenly, there was nothing else for them to talk about. They finished their drinks as quickly as they decently could. Dan spent the time explaining to O'Brien the economics of mass-producing the solid-fuel rocket boosters he used, instead of handcrafting rockets one at a time. He neglected to tell the man that Astro Corporation had a warehouse full of boosters that the double-damned Internal Revenue Service would not allow them to discount as inventory. Matagorda Island, Texas. It was almost noon when April caught a faint trace of jasmine perfume and looked up from her computer screen. A pert, freckle-faced redhead was standing in front of her desk, smiling at her, wearing a white T-shirt and hip-hugging shorts.
Mr. Randolph's not in, April said. Can I help you?
Randolph went to Washington, didn't he?
Asked Kelly Emmons.
He should be back tomorrow,
April replied guardedly.
Actually, I came over to talk with you, not Randolph.
Before April could reply, she fished a slim wallet from the back pocket of her shorts and flipped it open.
I'm Special Agent Kelly Emmons, Federal Bureau of Investigation.
April got to her feet. She was several inches taller than Emmons, leggy and sleek. With a desk between them, they looked like a high-fashion model and a bouncy Texas cheerleader.
If she's carrying a gun, April thought as she looked over Emmons, I can't see where it might be.
Why do you want to talk with me?
April asked.
I'm only Mr. Randolph's executive assistant.
Emmons surveyed April with clear blue-green eyes.
I bet you know more about what's going on in this outfit than your boss does.
Warily, April said,
That's an old cliché, Agent Emmons, the all-knowing secretary. Call me Kelly, and don't pretend to be modest.
Without smiling back at her visitor, April said,
All right. What do you want to know?
Why don't we talk over lunch?
Emmons suggested.
I was planning to eat here at my desk.
Let's go to the motel. The food's not much, but I've got an expense account. Let Uncle Sam treat.
Wondering if it was a suggestion or a demand when an FBI agent invited you to lunch, April shrugged and answered,
Okay, why not?
Emmons led April drive to the motel in her Sebring, the top down and the warm, humid air blowing in from the Gulf tousling her hair. The dining room was almost completely empty, despite the fact that the nearest competing restaurant was a ferry ride away in Lamar. They took the booth at the end of the row. Only one other booth was occupied.
Catfish?
Emmons asked, looking up from the one-page menu.
Is it fresh, do you think?
April said,
Look, Kelly, you don't have to put on an act with me. I'll tell you everything I know. I don't need the down-home routine.
Emmons looked genuinely surprised.
But I love catfish. I was practically raised on catfish.
Where?
Little town called Kildare Junction up in Cass County, not far from Texarkana.
You're from Texas, then?
Born and bred.
Went to Longhorn U down in Austin.
April relaxed a little, but only a little. When the barmaid sauntered over to their booth, Emmons ordered the catfish. April asked for a salad.
Something to drink?
Cherry Coke, please, said Emmons. I'll have iced tea, April said. Unsweetened.
You're a southern gal, too, Emmons said as the waitress left. Virginia?
You've read my personnel file.
Not yet.
It's your accent. I like to peg people by their accents. Southwestern Virginia, maybe. Hill country.
April had to admit she was right. Can I buy you ladies a drink? April looked up and saw a technician she knew, smiling shyly at them, a bottle of beer in his left hand. Wally Berardino, she recalled. From the electronics group. Computer specialist.
We've already ordered, Wally, she said gently.
Oh. To Emmons, he said, Do I know you? I don't think I've seen you around here before. Before April could think of what to say, Emmons flashed a bright smile and said,
I'm new here. Looking for a job.
Berardino shook his head sadly. Man, you've come to the wrong place. We're all wondering when the old axe is going to fall. Emmons's smile did not diminish by a single milliwatt.
Well, you can't blame a girl for trying.
Guess not. Berardino seemed to run out of things to say. He smiled back at Emmons and walked slowly back to the bar.
I don't think it's a good idea to let everybody know I'm from the Bureau, Emmons said in a near whisper. It intimidates people, especially guys.
April said nothing. Their meals came and they talked while they ate. Actually, April did most of the talking, prodded by an occasional question from Emmons. By the time they had finished their lunches, April was feeling depressed.
So Dr. Tenney was killed, and then Pete Larson was found dead.
Hanged.
The local police called it suicide, but you don't think it was. I don't know what to do, April blurted, surprised by how awful she felt. I want to help Mr. Randolph, but I just don't know what to do.
Emmons nodded sympathetically.
That's perfectly all right. It's not your problem, it's mine. But I want to help.
For a long moment, Emmons said nothing, studying April with those light blue-green eyes of hers. At last she asked, Do you really want to help?
Yes. Why?
Now April hesitated a moment. Then,
I liked Dr. Tenney. He was like a big gruff uncle to me. And I dated Pete Larson. He wasn't a ball of fire, but if somebody killed him, murdered him, I want the bastard caught and punished. And Dan Randolph?
A ripple of electricity ran through April.
She can see right through me, she realized.
Randolph's the one who needs your help, isn't he? Emmons asked gently. April nodded, not trusting herself to speak without blubbering that she loved Dan.
All right, said Emmons softly. I think you can help.
It might be dangerous, though.
Tell me what I've got to do, said April.
Caracas, Venezuela. By God, thought Dan. He looks like some Spanish conquistador, straight out of the History Channel. Put some armor on him and one of those steel helmets and he could play Cortez or Pizarro. Rafael Miguel de la Torre Hernandez did indeed look like a high-born Castilian. Tall, stately, every inch the patrician, there was no doubt about who he was as he approached the little table on the balcony of the hotel's bar. His cheekbones were high and his nose finely arched. His hair was beginning to gray at the temples, very distinguished, although his full mustache was still luxuriantly dark. But as Dan rose to his feet and extended his hand to greet him, he saw that Hernandez's eyes did not match the rest of his appearance. They were a dull, muddy brown. The eyes of a peasant. The eyes of a man who could be corrupted. Good, thought Dan. He had waited at the balcony bar for more than half an hour before Hernandez had deigned to make his appearance. Across the street was Bolivar Square, with its tall, thickly leafed trees spreading their branches out over the busy avenue. Sloths hung upside down from their hooked claws in the trees, barely moving, hardly showing any signs of life, while chattering monkeys raced through the branches like supersonic Tarzans, zipping around and around the entire square endlessly as if they were hopped up on amphetamines. Dan had watched them, fascinated, until Hernandez showed up.
Señor Randolph?
Hernandez asked politely, needlessly, as he took Dan's hand in a lukewarm grasp. He wore an expensive-looking light gray suit.